Hello, welcome back to Lumos Maxima. I'm Sarah.
I'm Delaney.
And we are getting into our relationship series. So last week and the week before that, we finished our romance. This week, we are going to be talking about friendship. Friendship is admittedly a huge part of the series. There are a lot of them, from obviously very important, the trio, to things that are probably less important and you could not talk about for your entire life and be totally okay. So, it's because the books are written from the perspective of Harry, we only get a sense of relationships that are people he think are important.
Right.
So if they don't even register for him, they don't even register for us. So
yeah.
For the sake of brevity and editing, we've kind of grouped the friendships to highlight some of our favorites and our least favorites. And for the most part, we are going to try and stay away from talking about the trio.
Yeah.
If you're hoping to get just a trio-rich episode, this is not it. However, we have a whole trio series. If you really want to... Sorry, there's a dog hair in my mouth.
Go.
Okay. So if you're really wanting to not have dog hair in your mouth and also hear about the trio, their life, their relationships, their friendship, all that, we have a whole trio series. It's back kind of towards the beginning of our podcast. That was the first series we ever did. So we will lightly touch on the trio because obviously we can't do a friendship episode and not touch on it. But we really are going to try and spend our effort focusing on a plethora of other friendships and relationships within the series. So
cool.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. As per usual, can you tell that we're already tired and it's only the first day of the week? Spoilers, mature content, language, and opinions. There will definitely be spoilers this episode and opinions, because you guys have never heard those from us before.
Never.
And I don't know about mature content, but we're going to talk about a serial killer. So does that count as mature content?
I'd say.
I think so. I think it should.
Good bet. Yeah.
It should. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're me, I think serial killers are very fascinating. And I don't think it's mature content at all. If you're my dogs who are sitting on the couch in the recording this week, they think they're scary. Yeah. Well,
okay. So I'm fascinated, but it's still definitely mature content.
I mean,
but, okay,
whatever. Oh, hello. See, I said dogs and now they're like right up in my face. If you hear them growling in the background, that's because they're fighty boys.
Fighty boys.
They've been in the house all day, so they're kind of feeling like they need to be tough. We don't have any corrections. Kylet, go on. Go sit over there. Go sit. No, he's going to lay right down. Okay, whatever. We don't really have any corrections. Having so many opinion episodes makes it so easy to not have to make any corrections.
That was strategic.
Obviously, if you guys ever submit feedback, which sometimes people do, and your feedback highlights that we've made some sort of egregious chatty mistake, obviously let us know. We will throw that in there. But, you know, it's hard to be wrong when there's no right answer.
True.
So this week's weekly wizarding question is brought to you by Delaney and the internet.
Yeah.
Hard.
Yeah. It was one of those like marauders situations where they're going back and forth about something, and they brought up, can thestrals see other thestrals? And then I got to thinking, yeah, they probably can. But then can other animals see thestrals? Do they have to experience seeing death to see thestrals? What is this relationship here?
So I think definitely thestrals can see other thestrals, because there are lots of examples in the books of the young being nursed by the mothers.
Yeah.
It'd be very difficult to nurse them if you couldn't find the teat. I think other animals can also see them, particularly magical animals. So Crookshank, I bet she can see him. Hedwig, I think, can probably see him. Now,
we just don't have any evidence of it.
No, we don't have any evidence of it at all. I would think that your generic run-of-the-mill animal who doesn't process death in the way that humans do, because, I mean, the whole reason that wizards and witches can see thestrals is because they've seen death, and that somehow emotionally changes them to be able to see it. So I would think, you know, if a squirrel sees another squirrel die, they don't really process it the same way. Probably can't see it.
Yeah.
Probably. My other question would be, could an animagus in the form of their animal see one if they hadn't seen death?
That's what I was going to bring up. Yeah. I would think no.
I would think no, because you maintain a lot of your human qualities, right, even though you've turned into an animal. So I think only if that witch or wizard had seen death and also happened to be an animagus would they be able to see it.
Yeah, I agree. And like you said, I think that animals that can kind of process a little bit more, like dogs and probably Hedwig and things like that, Crookshanks, they could probably process death astrals. But like you said, like just like a mouse or something.
I don't know that the regular woodland creatures would be able to. Yeah. So what happens with it? So centaurs, are they in the same boat as the wizards where they have to see death in order to see them? Or are they in the same boat as magical animals where they can just see them because that happens to be part of their kind of wheelhouse?
So part of me feels like they'd have to be on the same boat as the wizards because
I think so too.
Like intellect, but at the same time, I also think that their intellect is so much different than humans where they're not really, I feel like they wouldn't be as affected by death the same way that like little woodland creatures wouldn't be.
Right.
So maybe not. Maybe they can fully see them.
Centaurs are, if you guys don't remember, they think that wizards are just so full of themselves. Yeah. And they laugh at the sheer absurdity that wizards could feel important when there's cosmos out there full of just so many bigger, more important, more powerful things. So there's a good chance that I think there's a good chance they wouldn't be able to see them just because they're like, oh, you died, whatever, like not right, a big deal. So
or that they would just start off seeing them with no issues,
right? Or they would see them and it would be a very normal part of their world,
right,
to see them,
right?
Yeah. So I think that's a good question. I feel like we've had some quality questions lately.
Yeah, we have. I agree.
See, we are giving ourselves 5 stars. If you have any insight or theories about whether or not thestrals can see each other and if other animals can see them, hit us up. You know what to do. We love feedback. We love chatting with you guys. So let us know. And that's about it for our mini segments this week. I think we're ready to just get into friendship.
I think we are. Let's go.
So we love the trio. Like we said earlier, there's so many friendships in the book. Obviously, a very central part to the series is that there are so many deep, genuine, special friendships that people have. And we felt like they definitely deserve some love. So they're going to get a lot of time. We also have a couple of friendships that we think are just terrible. And that's okay. And we'll talk about them too, because one of, at least for me, the favorite aspects of JK's writing is that she's able to portray what I think are very generic in terms of how frequently they occur, but apropos parts of human life, because I have personally witnessed relationships and friendships exactly like those in the book. Almost every single one that we're going to talk about today, I've seen actually happen in real life at some point.
Absolutely.
I have witnessed or been a part of a relationship, romantic, a relationship, friendship, a family dynamic or something that's almost identical to what she writes. So she does write the human element, I think, so well. And a lot of it comes out in the friendships that she writes and the dynamic that she writes between people. Absolutely. So that's one thing that I've always really enjoyed. Now,
and I think it's why that even though this is about a magical guy in a magical world, we feel so connected to it because the friendships and everything, they're still very real and we can identify with them.
Mm-hmm. And even the families that she writes, and obviously we'll talk about families next week, but the families that she writes, they're very real. And I've seen almost all of those in real life too. So it's exciting. It was exciting as a kid to read that and be like, oh my gosh, I have a friend and we're just like this. Or there's a teacher and I have a relationship just like that. Now, I don't know that she writes romance particularly well, but
yeah.
And at least not with this series. It may just be Harry Potter because she has written other adult books, which we have not read, but we keep saying we're going to. So maybe that should be our next read. but I would like to see if she's able to write comprehensive, complex romance at some point. Yeah, it's definitely not in this series. But
because and I feel like it's kind of not fair to judge on Harry Potter because it is technically a children's series or start as, so yeah, I don't know. But Fantastic Beasts seems to have a little bit more, so
Fantastic Beasts has a little bit more. I think it might be a little bit easier to write because she's starting out with characters who are older.
Right.
Yep. I don't know if it's that she's opposed to the idea of writing true romance with kids, because by the time she really writes something that's not a cheesy romance, they're technically adults by wizarding standards. So I don't know if it's an age dynamic or what, but we definitely do get a little bit more in Crimes of Grindelwald. So I definitely agree with that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So for this week, kind of like with the romantic relationships before, we're going to talk about a couple elements of each of the friendships. The first is we're going to talk about how and when the friendship started, kind of the why, how, who, what, where, when kind of thing. Then we're going to talk about whether or not we love or hate the friendship. And then the last thing is we're going to say, would we want to be in the friendship? Why or why not? So
yeah,
for the most part, I would be in at least most of these.
Most of these. Yeah.
Most of these characters are pretty fun. Yeah. I don't know. Even those might be fun to be a part of every once in a while. So
Okay, we
will start off with our favorites. And for the most part, our favorites are also relationships that we think are pretty healthy, beneficial in a mutualistic way, what we would consider to be not toxic relationships, because we do have some toxic ones that we'll talk about later on. But the first one, for obvious reasons, is the trio. We're going to talk for less than a minute on this.
Okay.
Harry, Ron, and Hermione. They become friends. Harry and Ron are friends instantly on the train. Hermione doesn't really get to be friends with them until the third year. Well, second year, she proves her worth, which is ridiculous. Third year, she's truly in the group. They become friends because they need each other, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I would say I love the relationships that they have. I love that friendship. I think sometimes it has a little bit of a weird dynamic because Harry is the focal point of it, and he brings together two very different people. But
I think that's beautiful.
I think it's nice, and I think it works in a way that the romantic relationships that we talked about last week that were within the trio, I think it works in a way that didn't for me. Because I think people can be very opposite and be friends, whereas in a romantic relationship, that puts a lot of strain on it.
Yeah.
So I think that we definitely like this relationship. I would want to be in the friendship, definitely. I think Harry and Hermione and I would be good friends. I don't know that Ron and I would be such great friends, but I think that we would be comical together. So that would work.
Yeah, I agree.
Same. So, so it was a minute and 18 seconds, but I was really close. So that's the trio.
Good.
We're done with that.
Is the one that is probably my favorite, if we're being honest with ourselves.
See, and I don't know that I would need to be, I don't know if I would feel the need to be a part of it, but it's the Marauders and Lily.
Yeah.
They're obviously on our favorites list because it's a fun group of people. They seem to really exemplify true friendship. They become friends whenever they are starting school. As far as we know, Lupin and Sirius and James are fast friends at Hogwarts.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they become friends because they're kind of a group of oddballs.
Mm-hmm. The trio.
Just like the trio. Yeah. And it works because Harry, a lot like his father, kind of the center of attention. Although it seems like James wants to be the center of attention, Harry just happens to be it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then Lily, kind of gets in with the group later on. I love the friendship because they go to some extreme lengths to prove to one another that they are, in fact, very dedicated to the friendship. I mean, Lupin's a werewolf, and the other ones are like, you know what? We'll become animals, too, and we'll all hang out.
Yeah, that's insane.
That's insane. That's dangerous and insane, but they really bonded. They have a deep, deep sense of loyalty to one another. I don't think there's a thing in the world they wouldn't do for each other. And then Lily, later on, when she and James become romantically involved, is very accepting of the friendships. And I think she shows a lot of love and acceptance to both Sirius and Lupin, which they don't find in a lot of other people. So I think that's great.
Mm-hmm. And we're also not including Peter Pettigrew in the Marauders.
No, I did not include him at all because Delaney would have a hemorrhage. She would stroke out right here, right now.
I would. So, I would, yeah. He's not in the Marauders.
So,
I don't care what anybody says.
I don't know that I would necessarily want to be in the friendship because as much as I am just a bitchy, bitchy gal, I am quite a rule follower. And I think they would push the boundaries a little bit too much for my taste, but I think they'd be fun to hang out with on the weekends.
See, I feel like I feel like I'd actually really like them. I feel like I'd be kind of similar to Lily, I guess. And also I think that the Marauders are actually pretty similar to my friend group here. So, there's that. No, I think it would be really fun. I like the fact that they're like kind of like happy-go-lucky kind of situation, just always like goofing around, but at the same time when it comes down to it, they are there for each other, no problem. So mm-hmm. I love that.
They can definitely get serious when they need to. I mean, obviously they all become members of the Order of the Phoenix in a time that's quite tumultuous, so good for them.
Yeah.
So we give them many stars on the many star rating.
Yes.
The next one, I also give many stars. And although this, so it's the girl tribe, which is Ginny, Tonks, Molly, and Hermione. Mm-hmm. This one takes a very long time to form. And it really only forms because they end up with a mutual enemy, which is Fleur. Yes. So Molly starts bringing Tonks around because she doesn't want Bill to marry Fleur. And Hermione and Ginny don't like Fleur being around because they feel like it's threatening their relationships with Harry and Ron. So they band together around the fact that they hate this girl. So bad. Women should be supporting women.
If we're being honest, a lot of women friendships start like that.
A lot of female friendships do start with a mutual hate for another female, which guys get it together. We already have men trying to bring us down. The last thing you need to do is feel threatened by another woman. Unless she's holding a gun to your head, let her be.
Then feel threatened.
Then you can feel threatened. If she happens to be confident and together and driven, be glad. Be her. Like that. Team up with her. Build an empire. Kill men.
Yes.
Just squish the patriarchy.
Wait. Scratch that last one. Not squish the patriarchy.
Maim. Okay. Like maim men. So.
Dobby only meant to maim, Lord. Seriously.
So. The friendship started, this starts sometime in Half-Blood Prince and continues on through Deathly Hallows. Obviously, it starts around the central idea of hating this beautiful, talented woman that's around.
Yep.
But after Bill and Fleur get married, the four still stay close because I think they realize that maybe their differences aren't quite so big. And it's one of the only, there's only a couple female-centric friendships on this list. That Which we could come so up with.
Weird.
It's so weird because JK is a woman.
Right.
And she writes predominantly male-centric friendships and relationships.
Yeah.
So I don't know what her deal was. Maybe girls were just super catty to her.
Probably.
But I like the relationship that they have once they are staying friends for what I think is a much more positive reason.
Yeah.
And I would want to be in the friendship because those are all kick-ass women.
I also like that there's such like a big age difference with Molly and Tonks being older and then Hermione and Ginny. And I love it. I just love it.
And even so, I mean, Ginny and Hermione are kind of close in age, but Tonks is probably a good decade, 15 years. No, even more. Cause I'd say like 10 to 15 years older. And then Molly's, you know, like 10 to 15 years older than them. So they're really spinning a lot. So
I love it.
I think that's cool. They do have the same pull towards doing things for the good and protecting people. So I can see why they would end up staying together. So once they kind of got that together, I would absolutely want to be in that friendship. Girl power.
Yes.
Makes me happy.
Yes, me too. Agreed.
And this next one makes my heart smile. And it's just, it's just because it's such a deep, genuine affection.
I know.
And it's so difficult. I think it's so difficult to write a deep, genuine affection that doesn't somehow turn creepy.
Or just seem forced.
Or just seem super forced or just not quite come across in the truly deeply loving way. But it's Harry and the Weasleys. Yeah. And one that kind of sounds like a band. Harry and the Weasleys. I dig that. Which they have enough people, they could have their own orchestra.
Yeah, lots of people in that. Jesus.
So this friendship starts Harry's first attempt to get on the Hogwarts train. They see him struggling, and Mama Weasley says, come on, everybody's getting on the train. And then obviously he's fast friends with Ron. He has a deep respect and admiration for the twins. He obviously loves Ginny in her own special way. He thinks that Arthur Weasley is just a hoot and a half. He's not sure he's crazy about Percy, but to be honest, no one is.
Okay, who is?
No. And he doesn't have a ton of interaction with Bill and Charlie. They're a lot older and they're kind of away, but the interactions he does have are very positive. And he loves the Weasley family, and he would do anything to protect the Weasley family, and he spends so much time with them, and they open their homes to them, and the Weasley family has nothing to give.
Yeah.
The Weasley family is strapped for cash, is tight on time, and has a ton of people that it carries on a daily basis, and they welcome Harry because he looks like he just needs a home, and they're thinking, you know, why don't we provide that for him? Yeah. And it becomes so much more than just a place for him to hang out on the summers. He loves them. And Miss Weasley gives Harry a watch that was her brother's for his birthday. She knits him sweaters every holiday. It's so sweet. And there's so much love. And you want Harry to have this kind of friendship and relationship with people. So I absolutely love it. And I would absolutely want to be a part of that friendship. I mean, I want to be a part of the Weasleys just in general. But that friendship is just so genuine. And I used to have this relationship with someone that I was friends with in high school. And their family totally took me in. And I was an honorary member of that family. And I spent a ton of time over there. And we traveled together. And we did all our sports together. And it was just, it was an amazing feeling to have such deep affection for people that you weren't related to.
Yeah.
It's truly amazing. So that was definitely one that when I was reading about, I felt like she totally nailed the feelings and the actions. Yeah. I thought that that was great.
Yeah, agreed. And I love that Harry has a special and almost like in some ways private relationship with every single member. Like
he gives money
to the twins to start their business. And that's not really known to anybody else. Like you said, Molly gives him like a family heirloom, like all of these things that he has like a special relationship with each member and as a whole. I really that we get to see that.
Yes. And that's amazing. He does. He truly has a very special relationship with each member of the family. I mean, even towards the end, Bill and Harry end up having this very special relationship because Bill's like, yeah, I guess I'll sacrifice my fiance and I to make sure that you can come to the borough safely.
Yeah.
So, I mean, everyone does a part to keep Harry alive, and then Harry does his part to keep them all alive, and it's just, it's a big ball of love.
It is.
And I love it.
Yeah.
So, there's someone banging on my door. I'm not going to answer it. It's late at night. No one should be here, so let them go away.
What was that thing about serial killers? They're not creepy?
Well, it's serial killers, as a concept, are not creepy. One's banging on my door, definitely creepy.
Serial killers as a concept are extremely creepy. What do you mean? That's the definition of.
What, serial killer? The definition of a serial killer is not creepy. Most good serial killers are charismatic, good-looking, smart.
And they enjoy killing people.
That doesn't make them creepy. That makes them deranged. There's a difference.
I think you can be deranged and creepy, but it's okay. You're a Slytherin. You don't understand. It's fine.
I'm just saying, I will kill you.
See? You're a serial killer. That's why you don't think it's creepy.
On a totally less serious note, this next group of friends is one that we see, obviously, a ton of. It's the Gryffindor boys. So they don't get along all the time. I mean, they have their spats. They have times where they're not speaking to one another. During the Triwizard Tournament in year 4 and then in year 5 and 6 when things get a little bit rocky with what's going on with the return of Voldemort and the Ministry, there's a lot of tension in the common room. But for the most part, they're kind of a fun-loving group of people and they stay pretty tight and obviously they spend a lot of time together.
And when we're talking about the Gryffindor boys, when I think about it, I think of like Harry and Ron's dorm. So Harry, Ron, Neville, Dean, and Seamus.
Yeah. So that's the Gryffindor boys. Yeah. Obviously, there are a lot more Gryffindor boys, but those are the ones they actually sleep in the same
that specific room. Dormitory.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
And one of the best movie scenes for me is when they're all sitting around eating candies and just kind of like fucking around. That's the image that I want to capture when I say the Gryffindor boys, because they are a pretty fun loving group, and they do have each other's backs in the end. I mean, they all end up fighting in the Battle of Hogwarts together. They all stick together with it. They sleep together. They eat together. They go to classes together. They study together. They play sports together. So, I mean, this is a pretty tight group of people for not being best friends.
Right.
So maybe not genuine friendship and affection, but definitely a sense of familiarity that I don't think they have with a lot of other people.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you can have a roommate and not be best friends with them, but you have a special relationship with them.
Right. So I think it would be fun. Their friendship starts right away. I mean, you room with the same people, unless there's any sort of issue, your entire time at Hogwarts.
Yeah.
And I love the friendship. I think it's fun. I think it illustrates actual conflict that groups like this have.
Yeah.
And I would want to be a part of it. They seem like fun guys.
They do seem fun.
They seem like fun boys. So I dig them.
Me too.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, this next one. The reason I love it most is because it is a badass group of women.
Oh, yeah.
So this is the second of three, I think, female-centric relationships. It becomes male-centric towards the end, but it's the Quidditch homies. So it's all our Gryffindor Quidditch team players. Yeah. I'm sure that other Quidditch teams have similar relationships. However, we obviously don't see that because it's all from Harry's point of view. But the team has each other's backs. Whenever there's big fights and stuff going on, obviously the Weasleys are like down to fight, you know, whoever, whenever. But they're always, when anything's going on, they are a group and they're all on board.
Yeah.
So I dig that.
I adore Angelina.
I adore Angelina. I think it's weird that she marries George, but that's not my business. Weird.
But other than that.
Yeah, I adore Angelina. I think it's great that, so Katie, Angelina, and Alicia, they are like the power trio of Gryffindor Quidditch. They're also great friends on and off the pitch, which I think is super cool. Mm-hmm. And they're one of the only females who get friendship lines within their non-trio relationship. So I really dig that. And we unfortunately don't get to see quite as much. Like we have a lot of Quidditch scenes, obviously, but we don't get a ton of Quidditch interaction. I would like to see more, because it's either they're playing Quidditch and they're just talking Quidditch strategy, or they are going to fight the Slytherin Quidditch team and they're all just like, yeah, okay, we got your back. So that's all great, but
I'd love to see some bonding activities.
Yes. I want to see what happens when they go to the Three Broomsticks and hang out.
Yeah. Agreed.
Fun fact for the Quidditch homies is that a member of the Weasley family has held every position on the team at one point.
What?
Love so it. Ginny was a chaser and then a seeker. Charlie was a seeker. Fred and George were the beaters, and Ron was a keeper. So one Weasley has played every position at some point in time, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
So they, you know, when people are like,
Quidditch team.
Well, yeah, I mean, people are like, I want to have enough kids to have a basketball team. Well, the Weasleys literally have a Quidditch team, which is kind of fun.
Yeah.
So
and some despair.
And some despair, yeah. So there are a couple Weasleys that never played. So Percy never plays and Bill never plays.
Yeah.
Percy probably wouldn't have been any good anyway.
No, Bill probably would have been.
I feel like Bill's good at whatever he feels like doing. He just probably not interested.
Yeah.
But so we know a
team and some substitutes.
Yeah. But we know, like, Charlie and Ginny, we know they're both pretty talented seekers. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Next is our, I want to say, third and final female relationship, friendships.
Yeah.
It's Lavender and the Patel twins. So Pavarti and Padma, who, by the way, interesting fact, they're identical twins, but sorted into different houses. Padma's a Ravenclaw and Pavarti is a Gryffindor. So I keep hitting my mic, guys. I am so sorry. It's not loud for me with my headphones on, but when I go to edit, I notice that it's just like boop, boop in the background. So I can't edit that out.
What is it like?
Boop, boop.
Oh, interesting.
That's going to be really loud when I edit. I just hit it three times. Yeah.
Yeah, good job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Delaney's deaf now.
Yeah, pretty much. It's fine.
So,
I was deaf before.
Yeah. It's interesting because we have talked about, obviously, how people end up getting sorted into houses and what's more important, the inherent traits that you have or what you'll be in the future. Can the sorting hat distinguish between what you value most, blah, blah, blah. These guys are identical twins. They have almost identical personalities, but, and we don't know what this distinguishing factor is, and it kind of drives me crazy.
Yeah,
but,
because we don't really get a whole lot of...
No, them. We don't. We do not get a lot of Patel twin personality, but something about them is different to their sorted into different houses, which is crazy because the Weasleys, although they all are pretty similar, there's a lot of distinctions between Ginny and Ron and the twins, you know, so on and so forth, but they all end up being Gryffindors. So there's something fundamentally different about Padma, obviously, but not to talk about sorting, to talk about the relationships that they have. Lavender and the Patel twins are pretty much besties. It's more so Lavender and Pavarti because they're both Gryffindors.
Yeah.
And it seems like they have just a pretty normal teenage girl friendship, which...
Yeah, I was going to say, they're kind of textbook teenage girls.
They're textbook teenage girls, but it's nice to see just, like, normal-ass people hanging out because the trio's obviously not a normal friendship.
Right.
And
yes, that is nice, yeah.
It bothers me because they are portrayed almost exclusively as giggling schoolgirls who, like, their favorite subject is divination, which everyone kind of thinks is stupid and not important, and they giggle. They're always giggling. Always giggling.
They're always giggling.
But
I've seen relationships like that, so it doesn't bother me quite as much, but I would like to see a little bit.
I've seen relationships like that, definitely. However, I know that most of those relationships have a lot more substance.
Like
when they're
underneath, yeah.
Right. So, and to be fair, we see all this from Harry's perspective. So he may just exaggerate and just feel like they're always giggling. Or he may just only catch them at moments where, you know, it's glances in the classroom. And they're like, he looked at me, which, you know, whatever. But
yeah. And this is Harry, a teenage boy. So all he
probably
thinks
all girls giggle.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so I have a feeling that they probably do have genuine friendships. I mean, Lavender doesn't seem to have a lot of other friends, nor do the Patel twins. Yeah. So at boarding school, which is what I consider Hogwarts to be, they've got to have someone. So I would think that they're pretty tight.
I would think they're pretty tight. And I, you know, judging from Lavender's relationship with Ron, she clearly knows how to care about people. So I think that she probably does have like a deep relationship with them.
Right. And I totally just, oh, that's what I was going to say. The train of thought left the station and I was not on it, but I got it. I caught up. I got better. This is one of the only female relationships. So the Quidditch homies, the twins and Lavender, and then the girl tribe eventually are the only female relationships that aren't built around just a catty animosity, just bitchy to each other all the time, because all of the other female interactions that we see, they are not pleasant to each other.
Yeah.
And it crushes me that she didn't write female friendships or relationships in a better light, because, you know, she's a female. So maybe she just has dude friends, which is cool. I had mostly dude friends growing up. It's not a big deal, but there are eventually most people do have genuine, deep, affectionate friendships with people of their gender.
Right.
Most of the time people get to that point. It does seem that male relationships are just a lot easier to maintain, but that's because they're stupid.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a fact.
So, this next one is one that obviously we love. I find it problematic at a lot of points in time, but Hagrid and the trio, they love each other. Hagrid, I know without a doubt, would do anything for Ron, Harry, and Hermione.
Absolutely.
At any point in time, would do anything to protect them, to make them feel better. He basically emotionally supports Hermione for a very long year.
Yeah.
A very long year, because the boys are just being terrible to her.
Yeah.
And he holds a very, very special place in Harry's life. But I think he just sees them as people that he loves and wants to protect, and he does that. And obviously the trio feels a great amount of affection for Hagrid because they do so much for him.
Yeah.
So much for him.
Yeah. And I think one special thing about their relationship too is that unlike with the girl tribe where Molly is older but still treats the younger girls as girls,
mm-hmm.
I feel like from the very beginning Hagrid treats every single one of the trios as their own people who are intelligent and know what they want and know what they're doing. Like, he never talks down to them as children.
No, never. I do think that part of that is because Hagrid himself is very... All right, that noise is my dog snoring. He's fallen asleep. Hagrid is a little emotionally stunted.
I agree.
And I think he's also a little, I don't know if intellectually stunted is the correct term for it, but he never progressed into an adult role.
Right.
Not more extreme than Sirius did, but he and Sirius kind of loom in that same time where they never quite outgrew their teenage years.
Right.
And so they have a unique ability to treat everyone as their equal, regardless of age or status, which is not necessarily bad, but I do think that there are times when adults need to be adults and kids need to be kids and be treated as such. Hagrid misses the boat on that sometimes, but he never does anything with spider malice. And a lot of the things that he does, it seems like he just genuinely doesn't know that it's not a good idea to tell kids that now they're in charge of his half-brother giant.
Right. Yeah, and that's where it can go over the line. But in a lot of ways, he does the opposite of that. So the good side is that at the same time, they feel like they can go to Hagrid for anything.
I mean, the first thing they do every year is run down and say hi to him. They love him, and he loves them. And it is beautiful. I do think that the relationship that they have is beautiful.
Yeah, it's a fully open and trusting and respectful relationship that Harry seems to struggle with a lot of other adults. So I love that he can have someone, even if Hagrid is a little stunted and does a little questionable things, he has an adult that he knows that he can go to. So I love that.
Yes, I agree. Obviously, that friendship started early on. Hagrid is the one who collected Harry, at many points in time.
Yeah.
Harry introduces Hagrid to all the other kiddies and they become good friends. I love the relationship. Delaney loves the relationship. We would totally be a part of it. However, you could not make me go into the woods to hang out with his dog.
I'd go hang out with his dog. I wouldn't go hang out with the spiders or his half-giant brother.
I'd hang out with the dog, not in the woods, though.
No, probably not in the woods, but...
Yeah.
If I were going to hang out with anybody in the woods, it'd be Fang.
I don't think so.
Not the spiders.
No.
Fuck, not the spiders. Oh, God, no. I'm Ron. Yeah. All of Chamber of Secrets, I am Ron. I hate spiders.
I couldn't care less about spiders or snakes or ghosts or... I'm just not really that afraid of stuff, guys.
Well,
but we've talked about that.
I hate spiders so much. Oh, my God.
I have a great fear of being a disappointment. That cripples me emotionally.
I'm
sitting on the couch and I'm feeling like we're having a therapy session again. This must just be torture for people who listen to our podcast.
It is.
Anyway, back to what we're actually supposed to be doing. This next one, the entire DA. So all of Dumbledore's army, which I would say most of them are.
Who's that annoying shit? What is his name? Is that McLagan?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like him.
Right. But I mean, this isn't about the individual. This is the friendship that the group has. They come together and I don't know that they form really a deep friendship. Although the DA is definitely what forges the friendship between Luna and the trio.
Which I love.
And Neville and the trio.
Love.
Which is great. But the DA, they have a friendship that is built upon an idea more than bonds, which I think is neat.
I love
they that. Have an ideology that they believe in. They're doing things that they believe in, and they end up, I mean, I think they have a lot of fun with it, which makes it fun for us to read because it's going on during the fifth book is dark. It gets darker, but that's when it really starts to get super, super dark. And this is kind of the little ray of sunshine in it, but they're doing things together. Luna talks about in Half-Blood Prince how sad she is that they aren't meeting anymore, and Harry kind of narrates that he gets the idea that the DA was really the only social interaction that a lot of these people got that was constructive. Right. So I wouldn't say that they were like buddy buddies, but I think they were definitely more than acquaintances because they bonded over a very similar need to take this cause on.
Yeah, and there are a couple members there that I don't think should be included in that, but for the most part, especially like you said, Luna and Neville and Cho, but the bitch that gets her boils on her face, she can go. Bye.
Well, it wasn't all her fault, okay? They threatened her mom.
Oh, I know, but
yeah, snitches get stitches, really, guys. If we invite you to our secret army, don't go telling people.
And it's just also that she's not really a part of that relationship. And I feel like McLagan is kind of on the outskirts of that, too.
But... Oh, yeah. There are oh, my goodness. Sorry, guys.
Wow.
There are a ton of people that are a part of the DA that I could not name if I had to.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, the Creevy brothers, I think they're in it. And they have a lot of fun with it, you know? Yeah, so there are a lot of people that are in it that it just helps to nurture a source. It's just a source of camaraderie, I think, for a lot of people. So I dig that.
Yeah, me too. It's cool.
I dig that. Oh no, is this our last good one?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, well, it's the professors, and I say that in kind of a blanket statement because obviously not all of the professors are crazy about each other, Snape, and it doesn't apply to everyone. But Hooch and Sprout and Gribbly Plank, I know that they hang out because there are scenes of them like drinking mead together, which I think is just too fun.
Yeah, too fun.
And
but, you know, you have your friends at like your coworker friends,
right? So this is our coworker friendships. This is kind of our nod to that. And then Dumbledore and McGonagall is Delaney's input on that. And I just don't know that they're friends.
I think they are. I think they definitely are. I think we don't see it a lot because McGonagall is kind of just very serious about most things, but no, I feel like they're friends. I feel like they trust each other with a lot. I think that they're friends, and I think I would love to see that relationship
more. I don't know, I feel like it's much more of a mutual respect for their craft and for their position than it is friendship, because although they trust each other, I just don't see them hanging out.
No, I do for sure. I mean, you have to realize, like, he was her teacher, and then she didn't know what to do with her life. She was working at the ministry and hated it. And then Dumbledore invited her to come teach. No, they totally have a close relationship. 100%.
Oh, I don't think that they don't have a close relationship. I just don't know that they're buddies. Oh, I think they have a very close working professional relationship. Absolutely. I think Dumbledore does for the most part with all of his instructors in some capacity.
I think it's more than professional with McGonagall.
I know that they spend a lot of time together outside of school. Obviously, with the whole Harry situation, it was McGonagall and Dumbledore that did all of that. So yeah. I know that they, and there aren't a lot of instances, actually there might not be any, where we see Dumbledore outside of Hogwarts with anyone else.
Right.
Other than maybe Snape at some point and Slughorn, but only because he goes to fetch him. But I don't know. I know for a fact that nobody hangs out with Snape. They don't have any, he has no friends.
Yep. Yep.
No friends.
I think that McGonagall and Dumbledore are probably, in my opinion, like the closest relationship with Dumbledore, other than obviously Grindelwald. Like, I feel like later in life, McGonagall becomes his Grindelwald. You know what I mean? Confidant, all that jazz.
I don't think so, but we can agree to disagree.
Okay.
Definitely.
I think the beds.
Definitely. So that's all our nice positive ones. These other ones, I think they do fall under the category of friendship, which is why they're on this list. However, we've just find them to have way too many negative traits to be considered good, I guess.
Yeah.
The first is Draco and his goons. Obviously, that's Crabbe and Goyle.
Yeah.
Draco's a control freak. He's definitely the leader of that pack. And I see a lot of people drawing parallels between the trio and then Draco and Crabbe and Goyle. That's so let me just tell you, hold up. That's not how that works. The trio are three individuals who happen to function as a unit, whereas Draco and Crabbe and Goyle is a individual who happens to have two people that follow him around. Because Crab and Goyle don't have any added value. They don't have individual personalities. When Draco is not around, they do not function.
And let's just put it this way. I don't know if you guys have ever done this, but if you play Harry Potter Clue, there's all individual characters, and then Crab and Goyle is one character. So if that doesn't tell you anything.
Yeah. So I've never played Harry Potter Clue, but that sounds about right.
Right?
That sounds about right.
Everybody is individual, and then you have your little piece for Crab and Goyle, and they're one person.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yes and yes. And then the next one is Voldemort and his followers. And originally I was like, it's not even friendship, but it's as close as Tom Riddle gets. But actually, as I'm reading, I'm realizing Tom Riddle, in his youth, was a very popular, very suave individual who had a good, he had a big group of friends.
He was like very popular. Club.
He was the leader of the club. Exactly. He was. And he actually built his first inner circle of Death Eaters out of his very close friends from Hogwarts. So he did have friends. Now, it's very difficult to talk about their friendship and that relationship because we don't see it in real time. We just know it happened and then we get him later on. Voldemort and his followers later on, not friends.
Yeah, and also he's like a psychopath and they can't really have genuine relationships.
Well, there's a big difference between a psychopath and a sociopath.
Yeah, I'm talking about psychopath.
I think you're talking about a sociopath.
No.
No? You think psychopath?
Psycho. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Sociopath, from my understanding, is that they can have relationships with people, but it's hard for them to do genuine connections, but they can understand, like, having a relationship with someone, whereas, like, a psychopath is, like, physically, like, unable and doesn't really care.
Maybe. But I think
he's a psychopath. Whatever.
He might be a psychopath later on. I don't know that he's a psychopath until he actually murders his family. Then he might be.
I feel like the torturing of other people, other children, is probably pretty psychopathic.
Maybe. But anyways, especially not
while you're a child.
Well, we have just decided that we're going to do some individual character episodes. So we're going to finish up our relationship series. Then we're going to do our episode on Wizarding Society and Stereotypes. Then we're going to do our Death in the series. Then we're going to do some individual character episodes. So Voldemort will get his own episode. We'll talk about, you know, what he really is. He at least has antisocial personality disorder, at the very least. 100%. But he does have friends. And I think he has genuine friendships, at least to the capacity that he could have at that age. Because he...
His most genuine relationship is with Nagini.
I think later on... It's hard because we don't see these friendships, but we read that he was popular and charismatic and had followers, and now they do tend to reference his friends as followers most of the time, so I think that would kind of disallow that from ever being an actual genuine friendship. But
yeah,
his quote friends are the ones who become the first Death Eaters, so there is some semblance of friendship,
right? Yeah,
you have to feel pretty passionately about someone to say, oh, you're 16 and you just murdered 4 people, I'm gonna let you tell me what to do forever.
Yeah.
Tough one.
I mean, a lot of people followed Hitler, so, you know.
Yeah, and man, Hitler was an ugly dude.
Yeah, he was.
Hitler wrote a manifesto in a bar, and then he went to jail.
And wrote it in prison. Yeah.
So he's stupid.
Yeah.
So that's it for our friendships. Obviously, we are fully aware that there are a lot more friendships in the book. If there's one that you think that we really just did not talk enough about or talk badly about and you didn't like it, tell us. Mm-hmm. Before we get to our little outro section, I just want you guys to know that I just saw Aquaman last week and it was awful. Don't see it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was so bad. Now, I am a Marvel girl, obviously.
Me too.
Who isn't?
Yeah, for real.
I love me some Jason Momoa, though.
Yes,
love me some Jason Momoa. I thought, wow, you're putting two beautiful human beings together on screen. So the main characters, obviously it's Jason Momoa as Aquaman, and then Amber Heard, not Amber Rose. I keep wanting to say Amber Rose. Amber Heard as whoever the fuck she was. And they're so pretty. You're like, oh, pretty people. And then you see all the scenery and you're like, oh, pretty scenery. And then they open their mouths and you're like, what the fuck are you doing? It is not hard to write fluid dialogue. It is so, guys, the movie is so bad. I gave it a 1.8 out of 10. And 1.7 of those points were because everyone was really pretty.
Yikes.
Yikes is right.
DC just doesn't do movies as well as Marvel does. It's just fact.
Like, if you list all the Marvel movie or all the DC movies that have come out so far, Wonder Woman's probably the best. And even her dialogue was very cheesy at times.
But it's definitely better.
It's
than
better.
Any other.
Aquaman is like, I mean, the Superman movies, they were fine. They were pretty generic.
I didn't like them.
I'm not really a Superman fan anyways. I mean, really? He's got all that stuff, but a little rock gets him down? Come on. And I just, absurdity. But Aquaman, I was so excited because Aquaman was one of my favorite superheroes growing up. And man, he just got shit on all the time and he didn't deserve that. He had cool power.
Yeah.
He was the descendant of Neptune. Neptune was cool.
Yeah.
And
okay. You're getting real.
Yeah. I am. Well, okay. That's because when they gave Aquaman small parts in the Justice League series, he seemed badass and funny and just rocking.
And then when he got his whole movie,
they were going to make Aquaman cool and like sexy and rough. And and let me tell you, man, so bad that I got my company, my hospital sends out a Christmas card to all of its employees every year. And they give you 2 free movie tickets, not a raise, but 2 free movie tickets. So he used the free movie tickets to go see Aquaman. Thank God it was free. The only reason we didn't walk out was because we ended up at the 10:20 showing and it was like 1 a.m. and we wanted to make sure that security was out there when we were out there. So it was really bad. So you can save your money on that one. Wait till it comes to like Hulu or Netflix or something. The reason I talk about it is it just broke $1 billion at the box office. No way in a million years should it have made that much money. I know all these people are getting hoodwinked into watching it because it seemed like it should be really cool and good. No.
Yeah, I knew it was going to go one of two ways.
Either so good you cry.
Well, no, I thought it was either going to be pretty good or really bad.
Yeah, it was real bad. Real bad. Yeah. And I know a lot of people hate on that because I have a lot of friends that watched it and thought it was just so good. And I'm like, not to offend anyone, but are you deaf? Did you listen to the dialogue? If you turn the sound off and watch it, you're like, ooh, pretty.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, maybe I will just watch it like that without the sound.
Yeah, just watch it or watch it in Spanish. It'll be way more interesting. So, anyways,
that was a nice little tangent.
That's not a part of what we're doing here today. Next week, because I'm getting back on track, bringing it around, we're going to get into families. And that's cool because you can pick your nose, but you can't pick your family. I wish I had a live studio audience. Someone would have laughed at that.
Would they, Sarah? Would they?
I'm adorable and people like me, okay? Yeah. Families are obviously a central part of the series. There are a lot of families that are instrumental in both the success and the downfall of Harry Potter. So there are some families that we love. There are some families we do not love, mostly because they reek of old money. Ugh. Mm-hmm. But we're very excited to the families episode because as we've kind of talked about today, they're just some families that we feel so strongly about and want to be adopted by instantly.
Yeah.
So that's pretty exciting. As always, we want to hear your feedback. You can hit us up on Insta at Lumos Maxima Podcast, on Twitter at Lumos Maxima Pod, and at Gmail at Gmail at lumosmaximapodcast@gmail.com. Not sure why that's so hard. I say it every week.
I don't know either.
Every week. Please rate, review, subscribe, do whatever it is that you can do on whatever listening platform tickles your fancy, because one, that lets us know that you like our content enough that you want to know when we're putting out new stuff. And it also helps other people find the podcast. It boosts our rating. It makes our podcast look sparkly and pretty so other people will listen to it too. We would adore you if you shared our podcast with someone. And even if they only listen to one episode, that's one more episode than they would have listened to. So,
true.
We also would like to remind you that you can turn on the notifications about our uploads on, I would say, most, if not all, of the streaming platforms that we use. We're on like 15 platforms now.
Yep.
And if you do that, then you can know when we're back every week. We don't upload necessarily at the same time, but we do try to do it consistently on Tuesdays. So if you're wanting to know when we're uploaded so that you can listen to us on your commute, just turn that notification on and you'll get a ping, especially because next week we'll be back with a fire episode and you want to know when it's coming out. So that is about it.
Nice.
If you're listening and you only want to learn one thing from tonight, it's that women should empower other women and female authors should write strong, important female relationships.
And that Aquaman sucks.
And that Aquaman's bad. Look, I'm not just saying it's bad because it's bad. If you go to Rotten Tomatoes, which I'm doing right now, that's the clicking noise you hear, and then you type Aquaman.
Just like that?
Just like that. Aquaman.
How do you type that?
Aquaman got a 64%, and that is generous.
Yeah. What do the Harry Potter movies have?
You know, that's a good question.
I know a couple of them are shit.
Yeah, so I'm not saying that they were, like, genius movies.
They're pretty okay.
So, let's see. Half-Blood Prince, 83. Chamber of Secrets, 82. Sorcerer's Stone, 81. Deathly Hallows Part 1 only got a 78?
Yeah, that's what... get out of here.
Order of the Phoenix got a 77, and... am I missing one?
Deathly Hallows Part 2.
Goblet of Fire got an 88. That's... ooh. Prisoner of Azkaban got a 90. I dig that.
Yeah, me
and
too.
Deathly Hallows Part 2 got a 96.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm kind of shocked that Prisoner of Azkaban got better than like Half-Blood Prince and Goblet of Fire.
It was so hard with it. Guys, if you're done listening to the episode, that's fine. We're going to talk about movies for a minute. It's so hard when you have a series that ended up being 8 movies to have 5 different producers over the course of 8 movies. Or 4 or 5. The same guy did the first 3, maybe.
No, I think the third one had a different one. Don't quote me on that. But I think the third one had a different one.
There were multiple producers who produced films for the Harry Potter series. So Chris Columbus, Alfonso Cuarón, Mike Newell, and David Yates produced them. And then after that, they were mainly then produced by David Heyman. So 5 producers, 8 movies.
Yeah.
That's insane. It is so hard to get screen continuity when you're doing something like that. And so that's why that, and so obviously some are just a little bit better than others, but that's why there's so much fluctuation in the ratings, because we love all the books and we love all the movies, but there was definitely, every time they turned over, there was a huge shift in how the movie was done. And you're like, oh my God.
Yeah. I'm just surprised that Prisoner of Azkaban had one of the highest. However, I did love that director. His scenery, like the way he did things, was really great. So I get that. But yeah, that's a little surprising to me.
Yeah.
Huh. I would think Half-Blood Prince would be like up there.
I don't know. Half-Blood Prince was not my favorite movie in the whole world. The book is my favorite, but the movie. I can see why Goblet of Fire and Deathly Hallows Part 2 got the highest ratings.
Goblet of Fire didn't get the highest. It was Prisoner of Azkaban and Deathly Hallows Part 2, right? I thought that's what you said. I thought that Prisoner of Azkaban and Deathly Hallows were both
on the high. Hang on. We're going back. The lowest ranked was Order of the Phoenix with 77.
I get that, yeah.
Then Deathly Hallows Part 1 was 78.
Yep.
Then Sorcerer's Stone with 81 and Chamber of Secrets with 82.
Uh-huh.
Half-Blood Prince, 83. Goblet of Fire, 88.
Uh-huh.
Prisoner of Azkaban, 90.
Right, that's what I was
part
saying.
Part 2, 96.
Yeah, part 2 and Prisoner of Azkaban are the highest.
I loved Prisoner of Azkaban. I thought it was fun AF.
Yeah, me too. But I'm just a little surprised that some of the later ones didn't get higher than that. But that's all right. It's cool. Everything's fine.
It's all fine. We're fine here.
You don't know how many times a day I go, it's fine, I'm fine, this is fine.
It's fine, I'm fine, this is fine. Yeah, and then we're...
Anyways. And by that, I mean I'm totally not fine, this is not fine, nothing is fine. Anywho.
Yeah.
I think we should end it, we're babbling.
Yeah, so we're going to go ahead and wrap this up. We will hit you guys up next week with the families episode. And that is all. Ta-ta for now. Bye.
Bye.